I got an A in physics.
Woo! Hell yeah. Look at you. Genius in the house, everybody.
I mean, call me Hank McCoy, because I'm not sleeping with anybody either. So there you go.
Oh, Mike, why do you hate yourself, Lisa? No.
No, who do I want to be? I'm like, who are the smart Marvel characters? I don't know. Hank Pym, he's kind of a douchebag too. I mean,
you could be Moira before they made her like evil.
Ew. I mean, no.
She wasn't that bad. She just wasn't much of a character back then, but she was an evil bitch, so.
That's true. Well, anyway. Welcome back, everybody, to Simply Amazing, the Nightcrawler podcast, where we talk about Nightcrawler and our life. And my dog shakes her little ass in the background and makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, hey. Daisy May, icon. She's making those dollars.
She is. She is an icon. She is the moment. She is everything. She is my Daisy May. But I am Lisa, aka the OG Nocturne. And coming on to me, as always, is the fabulous, beautiful Lauren.
If anything I ever did that you joke is me coming on to you was actually like flirting, I would just, I might as well be Cyclops at that point, because the fuck, what's happening there?
We'd be married at this point, honestly. That's the truth. So
we'd be married. You would have a clone. It would be a whole thing.
Oh my God. Imagine if I had a clone. That would be.
What would your clone be named? Because, like, you know, Madeline's Madeline. What would your clone rename themselves to?
Well, the question there is, what is the Madeline equivalent to Madeline to Jean? What is that to Lisa? And I'm gonna say, Rachel.
You want to be a Rachel? I love they brought Rachel up, because guys, guess what? Somehow, in case you don't know, going to connect Rachel to the X-Men 97 season one finale. And if you know, you know. If you don't, you're going to find out.
We're going to talk about it in a second. Honestly, it's not even Rachel. It's not even Rachel Summers that brought that name to my mind. So for those of you who know, Real Housewives of New Jersey has restarted. And, you know, one of the housewives' name is Rachel.
Oh.
And this season looks like an absolute toxic fire dump mess, but I'll be there for it because I can't
say, isn't that what reality TV is? Isn't that what you're there for? Like,
oh my God, I've been watching MILF Manor season two. Oh my God. They brought the dads. The dads are here, guys. It's just okay. But we're not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about X-Men 97, the finale, and, you know, a couple other little curt news things that have happened recently. But number one, we got to talk about X-Men 97. Lauren, tell me everything. What did you think?
Okay, listen. So if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know some of the things I think. If you go through my likes on Twitter, which I'm not saying you should, even though I try to be very conscious about why I like, in case people go through them, because, like, I want y'all... Anyways, you know how that goes, okay? But listen... Then you can probably tell some of the stuff I've seen and thought of and all that. It was a really good episode. I think the best episode of the series, and still remember it. It's also the most devastating. That I think that's what makes it one of the best, is that they do such a great job bringing all the emotions out of us. But that said, the finale was really good. The cameos were fun. We had some more cameos kick in, which, again, this is why Amisha is so great for superhero shit, because you can do cameos, no problem, and you don't have to negotiate, like, million-dollar deals with real people, but you still pay the animators what they're worth, obviously. Like, come on, guys. But anyways, like, the cameos were great. The biggest thing that is obviously most relevant to this podcast is Nightcrawler, and I think we all had about 300 to 200 million heart attacks at one point in the episode. Because if you don't know, in the comics, there's a run called Second Coming, and that's a run where Nightcrawler is killed, and it's garbage.
Specifically, he is killed in X-Men 25, which is one of the issues that Bo DeMaio like recommended for homework. Which, first of all, don't give me homework. This is fun. I don't need homework. All right, I'm not doing
homework. I love that opinion.
I'm not doing the homework either. It's like, oh, go watch this Star Trek episode. I'm sorry. I thought we were X-Men. Anyway,
Yeah. But no, I agree. I mean, I think it's good for, like, if people want to do the extra stuff, you can. But yeah, the rest of us, I'm like, I'm tired. I just want to watch, enjoy, and feel things. Or at one point, maybe feel nothing. Who knows? But that's it. But yeah, like, yeah. So, and it's actually Bastion that kills Kurt. And so we were all, I'm sure, I know I was flipping my fucking shit, being like, I swear to God, because he's bamfing around, kind of just like in the comic. I was like, I swear to God, Kurt, if you bamf at one point and you're stopped with a blade or fist or something, I'm going to sue Marvel immediately.
So I was nervous because, of course, they mentioned X-Men 25 and Second Coming. However, killing Kurt did not feel like it would happen to me. And the main reason is like, you just killed, like, not even about Kurt, but let's talk about Rogue. You just killed Remy. And now you've spent the time since Remy's dead, you've spent that whole time building up the relationship between Kurt and Rogue. Fuck, you can't kill him too. Like, you just can't do that. I'm sorry. Just for her benefit, you can't do that. Because how much more can she take? But I was definitely holding my breath during the Bastion fight, because there was even a moment where you could tell Bastion was like calculating. And that was literally how it happened in the comic, is like he like calculated to figure out where Kurt was going to show up, and then he thrust his arm through it. However, I want to say that I feel like the way that Bastion ripped Cable's arm off and then beat him with it was almost like a Easter egg, like, to that, because of course Kurt bamps away, and he bamps away with Bastion's arm like in his chest. So I was like, maybe that's like an Easter egg, and that's why he was like, oh, you know, because that has to do with arms. But I did enjoy Bastion beating the shit out of Cable with his own arm. And don't even get me started. How dare you, X-Men 97, make me love the Summerses, because I was crying during that diner scene. Crying.
Listen, that was a really good scene, and it's very sappy, and some people might think it was a little over the top. But if it hits your empathy the right way, that does its job, which is that moment where she's like, oh yeah, you know, said you had Scott's eyes, and she uses her abilities to kind of make it so. Oh. And you can actually see his eyes. Like, listen, same here. Like, I'm like, I don't care. Like, we all know I'm not a Cyclops fan, but like, yes, damn. Yeah. All right. I hate y'all. You got me. Like,
it was beautiful. It was a great scene. I want to talk about the cameos that you brought up, because specifically one of the things that I've noted, like that happens a lot in comics and in other, like in other media kind of, is, you know, in comics, it's very established. There's all these other teams that exist, and there's all these other superheroes that exist. And then there'll be a comic issue where something absolutely catastrophic is attacking, and it's like just the X-Men are fighting it. And no one ever kind of says, like, okay, but like the X-Men are in Westchester, and like literally just a couple miles south are the Avengers and Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. Like, how come none of them are helping? So I liked so much that they like really touched. Not only did it make you understand the depth and breadth of what kind of villain Bastion was. I mean, like, they're attacking Wakanda, they're attacking Japan, they're everywhere. But it also showed that, you know, these teams exist and these heroes exist. And, you know, Disney can so easily spin it off. Daredevil cartoon, Avengers cartoon, like spin off, get like tons of cartoons going. I'm all for it. But, you know, the show definitely, you know, there was a lot of emotion. Someone brought up the whole thing about Black Panther. It's King T'Chaka, not T'Challa. Which, again, if we're talking about, if this is in some way connected to, like, they've already talked about, they want to connect this to the MCU. That makes sense, because in 1997, we saw in Black Panther, we saw T'Challa become the king, right?
I didn't even think about that, because I was thinking, yeah, like 90s comics, but that's a good point. I didn't think about that in the MCU to talk. So they can be connecting or pulling that from the MCU, which is fine. I didn't have an issue with it, other than I was surprised by it. I know some people have complaints with it because they think that was done because they refused to recast T'Challa. But to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, I need to Google this, but I believe other people have voiced Black Panther before that weren't Chadwick, like have voiced T'Challa. Like,
oh, I'm pretty sure
they had before Chadwick Boseman was cast or what have
yeah,
you.
Of course.
So I'm like, that. Yeah. So like your thing to me makes more sense, but we won't know unless Marvel ever tells us, right? Like we won't fucking know.
I mean, I'm gonna say it with confidence. I'm right. Like. It's just, it's
I love this for you. Yes, girl. That should be a t-shirt. I'm going to say it with confidence. I'm right. Sell it.
There you go. It's the timeline. Think about again, we saw in the movies, in the whatever year Black Panther came out, but it was like in the past 10 years, we saw him become king. So of course, in 1997, it's his father. I'm sorry, guys. If you have a problem with it, take it up with time. Okay. Talk to Nathan. Talk to Cable. Maybe he can understand. He can explain.
Listen, Nathan had his arm ripped off and he got beat with it. So I don't think he's open to a conversation right now.
He really got beat. He beat the shit. Bastion is so, I hate how much I love Bastion. He was a phenomenal villain. Cleo James was so good. And everything with Charles and Magneto also very loaded with emotion. I'm wondering if they're going towards the Joseph story. I don't know, because the whole thing about him not knowing who he was, but then at the end he said he was Magneto. So who knows?
I think, well, so one thing I love about this show, amongst many things, obviously, but one thing I really love is how they were able to take multiple X-Men stories and albeit from multiple different periods of time and be able to use them to tell those stories, though not completely. They told pieces of them, but they did it so that they could tell them all together at different points, make it work. And even though, you know, there are times where I'm like, yeah, I would have liked to see maybe more of Inferno. That'd be really cool. It still worked enough that I wasn't like devastated or pissed off. They didn't do more of it. I was just like, oh, bummer. They didn't do more of it, but that was really great. And then I moved on. So they took all these different X-Men stories we've gotten and threw them in there and somehow twisted them into their own new plot, which is genius, and honored them and changed things. And that's how you do an adaptation. This show, yes. This season has shown how you adapt shit. This is how you adapt comics. You take pieces of them, make them make sense, tweak a few things that you need to because you're telling a different story, obviously, just using all these different pieces of stories. And you go from there, like... It's fucking genius, and I have no idea how they pulled it off so well writing wise, but it truly is a feat. Like I really deserve to win awards or what the fuck ever for the writing alone, and that's not even talking about how great the animation and voice acting and all that is.
Oh yeah, well they're up for an Emmy. I don't know if they're actually up for an Emmy or
they submitted
yeah.
So we'll see or remember it, which I swear to God, if it doesn't at least get the full nomination, I'm going to kill someone. But if it does get nominated, then I will escalate that to if it doesn't win, I'm not actually going to kill anybody. But you know what I mean? I'm going to piss the shit.
And okay.
My God, it's gorgeous.
And I just want to say that if it wins the Emmy, keep in mind, this episode is the episode that introduced Kurt. So Kurt won an Emmy.
You're so right. Kurt wins Emmys. #.
That will be the second Emmy for this podcast.
I love this for us.
The stupid one. Listen, that I got from Stupid Things.
I also want to point out, though, that like the X-Men, just watch. Like the X-Men shit, it's going to hopefully, knock on wood, continue to be great. And as long as it is, it's going to be the thing that wins Marvel all the awards. Not the Avengers, not Spider-Man. And sadly... not all the awards Black Panther deserved. I will fight everyone forever on that. But anyways, it will be the X-Men that will fucking do it. Well, the X-Men are the gold mine for everything.
I don't want to go crazy and be like, let's start talking about awards, because these still are superhero movies. And, you know, it's not common, but it is becoming more common for these movies to get awards. However, I mean, what you're saying can be backed up by history, because historically that is what the X-Men have always been for Marvel. Until Marvel had to pivot to the Avengers because they had no choice because they had no movie rights.
Yeah,
so we've talked about this 1,000 times, but yeah.
Yeah, they screwed up, but like...
Well, they didn't screw up. I don't want to say that, because Marvel would have gone bankrupt in the 90s if they hadn't sold off those rights.
Fair. That's
so we would have no more. We would have no MCU if not for them having sold off those rights. So, however, you know... they had no choice but to make the Avengers big. But now that they have their top property back, look at what they've already done with it. This cartoon I had no expectations coming into this cartoon, because I'm an Evolution girl. I loved X-Men Evolution. Yeah. I've gone back and rewatched the animated series because I watched it as a kid, but I just find as an adult, it doesn't hold up the same way. It's very clearly a children's show.
Right.
And this, I had no expectations and I'm blown away by what they did. And you know, they've left us some serious cliffhangers. Oh, first of all, before we get to the cliffhangers and everything, there's no doubt in my mind that the Maximoffs are going to show up in season 2.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. So yeah, that's another cameo. So the second I watched it, I watched it early this morning before Lisa did. But I was like, oh my god, Wanda's here, Pietro, we saw Lorna and all this stuff. I'm like, well, number one, we're gonna see him, which is amazing. They're showing up at some point again, hopefully, knock on wood. Number two, the fact that they have them all there for Magneto means they might put Magneto's family fully back together again.
Like, I mean,
let's do it.
Okay, so two things on this. Number one, I just want to point out that Magneto, the woman that you are having sex with is on the same boat as your children. Reevaluate that relationship. It is inappropriate. Number one. Number two, at the end, you see this big poster with all like the assumed dead, and there are two people and two people alone who are listed as off planet. Or off world, I think it is. And that's Scarlet Witch and Pietro. So it's interesting that those two specifically, that wasn't done unintentionally, that those two specifically who are twins, who are, you know, Magneto's children, are the only ones listed as off world. And, you know, the others, most of them are presumed dead because they have been unhinged from time in a very interesting way. So,
yes, I'm super fucking hype with that because the first one we see is a couple of them. I know Rogue and Kurt. There's a couple other with them. But I think
Beast is with them.
Beast, Charles, and Magneto. There we go.
Was it them? And was Jubilee with them too?
No, I think so. But maybe. I don't know. Anyways, a bunch of them are in Egypt, like 3000 BC or something. And guess what? They find En-Sabanur, which if you know, he becomes Apocalypse. And if you didn't know that, don't worry. You were shown that a bit later. Because there is a mid-credit scene. So if you didn't see that, because you're like, oh, this is the same as you'll turn it off. You should have done that. There's a mid-credit scene. And you actually see Apocalypse, like fully as Apocalypse, on, where is it? Genosha, right? And Genosha, yes. Present day, he picks up a playing card. And it becomes very clear that, Lisa, you are right again. Because Gambit is going to become his Horseman of Death next season.
Oh, yeah, maybe. 100%. We're getting the fart monster next season, ladies and gentlemen. It is happening. We're getting hopefully they adjust his powers and his look, because like the whole black skin with white hair and like it was just not a good look. And it looked greasy. It just looked greasy.
Maybe they'll change it for the show. Like they probably will tweak it somehow. I don't know, for better or worse, but
you know what I like? I liked what he looked like in that flashback, which was with like the skeletal look. It was very like Dr. Facilier or whatever he's called from from the Princess and the Frog, which of course is very like voodoo and, you know, that like Cajun magic and stuff like that. So that look I'm all about.
That would work for him. I mean, it makes sense for him, but like, why not make him a Horseman Death, but tailor that look to who the actual person is, like make him look all dead, but with whatever flair that character has.
Exactly. Let's get some Papa Legba up in here, baby. Like make it happen. Like all about the voodoo. I like it. So we're definitely getting the fart machine next year or next season. And we dealt with En-Sabanur. We met him. But Jean and Scott were sent to the future.
They went to the future, and guess what? They found Mother Ascani.
AKA Rachel.
Exactly. Like, so guys, guess what? I get to talk about Rachel again, and I have a reason. Let's go.
No, we'll never stop talking about Rachel. Just wait till we start reading X-Men Gold on the show. Like, it's going to be a disaster. I can't wait. We should read X-Men Red soon, though. It was really good. Rachel, Mother Ascani.
Finished Exiles. We've been pushing back on that, unfortunately.
That's true. Well,
X-Men Red's only 12 issues. That's easier.
Yeah, and also with Exiles, there's like 100 issues, and we'll read more and more. We'll get there. So Mother Ascani, and of course, little son Nathan is there, and I love this because they're so So there's so much opportunity for story between the two timelines that, or the three timelines that we have now, because, you know, obviously Forge is still in the main timeline with Bishop. And we haven't seen where Wolverine and Morph are. Or Storm. Oh, Storm. We haven't seen Storm either. She wasn't in I thought Storm was in Egypt. No? Okay. This, again, I can't remember everybody. And again, I'm not 100% sure.
So much happened. I can't blame you.
That's it. I'm like not 100% sure about Roberto and Jubilee, honestly.
I'm going to need someone to like create a little chart that we can keep up with next season.
Yes. I know for a fact that it's only Jean and Scott in this future. That I know. It's just the past that I'm confused about. But yeah, we'll find out where the rest of them go. It's funny because this is very similar to an Exile story where the Exiles all got like pulled apart and put into different timelines together. And that was the one that
don't say Exiles and match a storyline, because then you're going to start thinking you might see Nocturne and Blink and all of them.
I don't think it's impossible to see Nocturne at this point, guys. I think anything is possible. Either. I think anything can happen. I think bringing Wanda in, I mean, it's like,
listen, the off-world thing got me too with Wanda. I was like, oh, that could be used. And then now in Marvel Snap, which whole other thing, but in Marvel Snap, Nocturne and Blink got cards. Guys, why would they do that?
You know what? This is Nocturne's world and we're just living in it. All right. So accept it, understand it. And this is the world of Talia Josephine Wagner, the queen of Agrabah, AKA, X-Man, Avenger, Queen, Beauty, the beauty, grace, skin of her face. I don't know. Anyway, so we have, there's a lot to happen, you know, in these different timelines. And of course, we'll find out next season. Apocalypse is definitely happening. I don't have many bad things to say about this show. It's just been it's been a fun time. And they've done Kurt really well. They did inject a little bit of his religion in this one with him praying, like he did a little signs of the cross, you know, when they were going up against Bastion. And then he was like doing the Lord's Prayer with Magneto and Charles, which that's good, you know, get in those good boy points with your future father-in-law, buddy. Like, you know, I know he's Jewish, but you know, he's spiritual. He gets it. So, I can't ask for more. This is the best Kurt we've ever had in between live action and like any kind of, outside of comics, this is the best Kurt we've ever gotten.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it seems like a lot of you guys, or at least people on Twitter do, because we put up a poll today on our Twitter saying, as a Nightcrawler fan, how happy are you with him in X-Men 97? And 83% of you said A, near perfection. 17% said B, that's almost my boy, and that's it. No one said anything less than a B, which I would agree with. This is the best Kurt we've gotten. I still think he could be a little bit better almost, but that's mainly my personal preference in terms of like, kind of like you just mentioned, like the religion stuff with him. I have no problem with him being religious. I just don't like that he seems hyper religious compared to other X-Men, and maybe that's because other X-Men aren't religious. I don't know, but I don't like him seeming hyper religious. That bothers me. But again, that's a personal preference. That's been here since the 90s. It worked for a lot of people. Totally okay. I'm having a fucking great time. I completely agree with you. I've seen some people complain about not enough time for characters like Storm. And while I get that, like, I think it is weird her not having as much time. I think it is cool that big X-Men characters that always or almost always get the most time, like Logan, like Storm, even though Logan gets far more than Storm, don't get me wrong, but they're two of the X-Men that get a lot of the spotlight. It was cool that for once they got less spotlight while others got more in terms of like Rogue. And that's the thing I think about with stuff where people are like, well, Storm sure got more. Okay, where would you have taken the time away from another character to give her stuff? Because I would not take away anything from Rogue this season. Has been so good. Personally, the only place I would even attempt to take time away from would be like Cyclops. But that's because I'm biased. That's not because it was a good storytelling. That's because I'm not a fan of Scott, but his shit was still good. So like there's nowhere in my opinion to take from to give to Storm, and she still got some stuff, which is good. And it was more than Logan. She actually got more than Logan. That's batshit crazy and wonderful. So I'm not saying people aren't valid. I just think there needs to be more context, and hope that maybe next season she'll get more. But again, look at the fact that these are characters that usually don't get anything, got something. And Storm is one of those X-Men characters that often does get a little more. So like,
yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, and here's the thing. I don't think Storm wasn't given enough. There were episodes she wasn't in, but she had another story. Like, she had an entirely other story going on that was very personal and important to her. So, right. This season was very much about the Summerses, and that's okay. Because, you know, those characters all played a very important role in everything that happens, like all the way up to Cable. And then secondary, I would say it was about like Rogue and Magneto. And Gambit and what's happened about with them. I mean, obviously lesser Gambit because he died in the fifth episode, but you know, there's still that. So, here's the thing. Not every character is going to be able to shine all the time. I mean, if it was up to me, it would be Nightcrawler 24/7. So, you know,
Nightcrawler, Nocturne, and Wanda. That's it. Nobody
that's
else.
It. The Nightcrawler show. That's the end of it, you know? And for the purpose of the story that was told and what we were given, I don't think there's any, I have no criticism as far as like someone else should have gotten more attention. I think Storm had a great, great story throughout the course of it. And she went through a lot between losing her powers, finding a way to gain them back in her relationship with Forge and, you know, all of that stuff. And again, it's a 20 something minute show. There's only so much they can pack into every episode. And this has always been the issue with X-Men, is because the cast becomes so large over time. Yeah. Certain characters do get shelved or
right. And that's exactly it. I completely agree. And with ensemble shows, that's what sucks about them, is that you get all these great characters, you fall in love with all of them, but they can't all get the time they deserve every single season or every single episode. And that can be hard at times, but as long as the writers find places to tell stories for them, and do a good job when they do them, that's what matters, is that they do that. If you know me, then you know I love the show Legends of Tomorrow, and that was one thing that was, I know, right? Crazy shit. I wrote a whole article about it, yelling at bitches for it. It was great. It was actually yelling at people. I'm actually very proud of that article. But anyways, one of the things I thought about this episode is I was like, this gave me, or this show at least, gave me a similar feeling to Legends of Tomorrow. Even though that was live action, this animation, I felt similar in that, you know, this is an ensemble cast. They really treated all the X-Men like an ensemble show, not the Wolverine show, not anybody, you know, it's actually an ensemble show. And they did a great job with the characters. And yeah, there are times, I want more Storm. Why wouldn't I want more Storm? She's fucking amazing. But I also was like grateful for the time I got with her, and I got great time with these other characters too, that it was worth it. It made sense, right? It balanced out to some degree. Do I wish I had more time with Kurt? Of fucking course I do. But you don't hear me bitching about how he got nothing in the series when he got a lot of great shit, the stuff he was given, and it worked.
Everyone got a moment to shine. You know, like Logan was very much in the background this season, but he had his moments, that, you know, the moment where, you know, with him with six reasons and then Kurt's like three more, like nine, and, you know, them working together is great. The moment with him and Jean was interesting. The moment, you know, with him and Magneto, like, I mean, he had moments. They've all had their moments. They all did.
Yeah, and Jean got her moment with the Phoenix, which,
oh my god, that was,
don't get me wrong, I know in the comics we're all like, tiny Phoenix, she keeps coming back, but I love seeing the Phoenix in action. I want her to eat planets and just do her thing, like, yes, Phoenix. So
yes,
I had a great time with that. I didn't understand though why, and I think it was just for plot purposes, that's why they didn't actually give us a reason, which, whatever, but I was like, oh, the Phoenix is that great, Jean's gonna destroy everyone, everything, and do whatever she wants, fantastic. But then she just sends the Phoenix away, and I was like, I don't know how you can just do that, but all right. And then number two,
but doesn't she have that it's like, that's what she kind of can do in the comics now, like she's kind of like,
I don't fucking know, but it was not explained to me in the show, so I was like, I have no explanation in this verse of how this is happening, so what's happening, but okay, whatever, I just accepted it. But then, you know, you're like, wow, they eliminated the threat. Well, the threat's still there, and I was like, why don't you get the Phoenix Force back, Jean? What the hell? That wasn't explained. And I'm sure there can be a reason, like, oh, you only take the Phoenix Force once because you keep using her too much, she'll fully consume or control you. But there was no explanation, and I was like, I just wanted like one line where they were just like explaining that. But it was fine.
I could see it. I will say that when the Phoenix took out Bastion, I literally like had to check how much time, like I was like, there's no way this is over, right? Like there was only 13 minutes of the episode. I was like, oh wow, we got a lot more to go. And of course I'm stressing out because I'm thinking, you know, our boy's in danger. But Bastian, like I just keep going back to Bastian as I love the way they decided to deal with him in the end, which was basically like, we keep fighting him, but he's inevitable. And they said it a couple times, the future is inevitable. I think even Kurt said it. And or the, he's the future incarnate is what Kurt said. And so it was more like, let's work with him instead of or try to like appeal to a different side of him. Honestly, do we even know what happened to Bastian? Like did he get teleported somewhere too? Like
I think he's dead, question mark, but we didn't see a dead body or anything. So yeah, until so you see the body back. And is dead, then like who knows? So
yeah, until Kurt's doing his funeral, we don't know what's going on. So
maybe he'll become a horseman for Apocalypse too. I don't know.
That would be interesting. That would be very interesting. So
I feel like it could work, but I don't know if he's ever been a horseman in the comics and which one. So,
well, that actually brings up something very interesting because I don't think Bastian was ever a horseman, but so Gambit is 100% going to be a horseman. We don't know where Wolverine is, and Wolverine was quite horrifically injured when we last saw him. So I think he might become a horseman too.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's possible, but the way I was thinking with it is they showed cameos of multiple Wolverine villains, like Omega Red was one of them, right? And Silver Samurai. And so he typically fights those guys when he's out on his own doing his thing. So I'm thinking he might get kind of a similar story position like Storm did this season, where he's like, fuck, I don't have adamantium. I gotta go do my own thing. And now we know a few months have passed in current time. And Forge is still trying to find the X-Men. So I think Logan's off doing his own thing, possibly. And he's going to fight Omega Red and stuff. And he's going to have his own little side story we see for a bit because we didn't get to see it this season. He was hell up on the back burner, which was fine. So I think we're going to see a little bit of that. It could end up with, after all that, he does become a horseman of Apocalypse. That's very possible.
So I want to point out something that I'm just realizing as I'm going through and I'm thinking about the different cameos. There were several cameos, specific cameos of characters who do become horsemen in different versions of X-Men, right? So Psylocke became a horseman in...
They did zoom in on her. I was wondering why.
Yeah, they zoomed in on her, right? So she's one. Lorna was Apocalypse's, a horseman. And I think she was a horseman at the same time Gambit was, and we had her show up in Magneto's mind with the twins. Right. Who else? If we're going by the movie, it was also Storm and Magneto, which they're obviously not going to be horsemen. We never know with Storm. I hope not Storm. But also Archangel shows up on that like poster at the end that says like, you know, if people are dead or off world or whatever else. We see like not just Angel, Archangel is there with the blue skin. So I think that like they're definitely setting up for Apocalypse, and we know for a fact Gambit is going to be one of the horsemen. So I guess we'll just find out who else of Apocalypse is going to get on his team, and how are the X-Men going to affect Apocalypse's reign and how he comes into power, because they just met him as like a young mutant who can barely even hold his own against a bunch of like random Egyptians.
Yeah, that was really cool to me to see that they found him before he was fully Apocalypse, or at least Apocalypse we know.
But he had those pocky lips.
I know he going, but I had a thought today that I want to share with people. I don't know, but it does relate to Buffy. Have you watched Buffy at all, Lisa?
Oh, girl, I was a teen. I was in high school in the 90s. Yes, I
okay, I'm Buffy. Just making sure. Okay, good. So you might get this then. Okay, I feel better. So if you have not, if you are currently watching Buffy for the first time for some reason and you haven't finished season two, either plug your ears or you're getting spoiled because this ties into that. But I had a theory today that at one point, so what if next season we basically got like a season two Buffy moment with Rogue and Gambit, where Gambit is like death. You know, he's a horseman for Apocalypse and he's, you know, fighting Rogue. And maybe before all this, Rogue was having trouble, right? Trying to fight him, or people are telling him you're going to have to do something harsh and she doesn't want to do it and all this stuff. And maybe she even is tempted to go to his side a couple times, whatever. I don't care. But basically we'll end with that moment where she finally decides, I got to do what I have to do. I don't know what else to do. She's accepted it. And then at the last second, Gambit comes back and it's too late, Lisa. It's too fucking late at that point.
Why did you remind me of this? Oh my God. I'm like having like PTSD from this moment in Buffy now. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Oh my God.
It would be fucking devastating.
Please,
brutal.
No, Marvel. Do not listen to her. No, we don't want it. I don't want it. No,
but
I
like,
can't. The girl's been through enough, okay?
No, I agree. I'm not saying it should happen, but I just had that thought and I was like, this is fucking horrible. But at the same time, I'm like, would be such good storytelling because listen, if you've watched Buffy and you've watched season two especially and you've seen that moment, okay, and you've seen all that buildup that Buffy goes through, that shit is peak like cinema. I know it's not film. I don't care. I haven't seen anything like that ever since then. Nothing has done that. You know what I mean?
For those of you who are following along, just because Lauren explained it, basically what the scene was Buffy has to kill Angel because he's evil. But like in the moment she is about to kill him, he gets his soul back and is like, Buffy. Uh-huh. And then she kills him because she has no
choice. Yeah. It's a whole dramatic thing where he's standing there and she's about to like stab him with a sword and he just stops and you see his soul come back to him. He's a vampire, got his soul back and he's good now. And he's just like Buffy and he says it like all soft and like puppy eyes and you just see her like die inside. Oh, and she knows she still has to do it. And guess what? She still did it. And then he like goes to hell forever. She literally sends this actual good person now to hell.
I mean, he goes
because
to hell
she has no choice.
He goes to hell for a bit, and then he goes to L.A. with Cordelia, so it's fine. And he gets his
own after show. He comes back, and that's all dramatic, and then he leaves her. They're always like that.
I mean, Buffy,
anyway, I'm not saying they should do it, but I'm just like, that's why I was so worried about Kurt this episode, too, is because I was like, if they can do what they did to Gambit, which they did, but also now we're getting him back next season, even though he's deaf, that means there's still a way to get him back from being deaf. So that's a good thing. But I was like, if they can do that shit to Gambit and devastate us like they did, they could totally further devastate us and put Rogue in a hole if they wanted. But I'm very glad, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
They didn't want to. And I'm glad they didn't do that because, like, we don't need the evil Rogue storyline, guys. I just don't need it.
I'm not against the evil Rogue storyline, but I will say that there comes a point where it becomes almost like torture porn or emotional porn. And it's just like, I just don't need to see her. Like, I don't need to see a character lose like the two most important or two of the most important men in her life. Like, you know, it's just too much for me. It would have been too much if they had killed him too. Like, and I don't know. However, I mean, like I will say for Rogue, you know, like her brother is known for smelling when he teleports, and now her boyfriend has fart powers. So I mean, poor girl can't win. She's gotta find someone without a nose and suck in their nose powers so she can't fucking smell. Because
right, yeah, no, fuck that. But on another note, what the fuck line did you say? I was gonna segue, and then I forgot what you said. Anyways, pretend there was a segue here, guys, because. I think he said it was good for her or something, or not good, but something that's good for Kerr, and this is outside the show, but if you guys were keeping up with anything comic related still, X-Men Forever number 4, to me, like, not the strongest issue on the planet. I don't really care about that line. The only reason I'm getting it is because of the Kurt and Dusty and Mystique shit. But huge win today, guys. Huge win because Destiny got her memory back from Butthead Charles Xavier and she now remembers she loves her son. How great is that, everybody?
Okay, so it's great, but Kieran, honey, what are you doing? I know you listen, you're a fan of the pod, whatever. What are you doing? I don't like it. I did not like the way it was handled. I don't know. It just felt like it felt like it was a battering ram. So the issue 3 where they introduced this, what it seemed okay, but then her showing up to Charles screaming, "Let me love my son." I'm like, oh my God. Like, oh my God. What? That's just not a line I enjoy. And then, you know, she gets it back, and then she like goes to see Kurt, and she's like, I'm sorry, I abandoned you. And then Kurt's like, oh fuck, the sword's back, Hope's dead. And then Exodus is like, well, moving on, guys, moving on. So it just felt like it felt very rushed, and it just felt very, and I'm sure we're going to get more story later. I guess my point is, I don't understand why they had to do it in this issue, because it doesn't seem like it was it felt very much like, okay, we need to wrap up this Krakoa era. So we need to like tie a loose, we're going to tie every single loose end. And that's what it felt like. It felt like a tying of a loose end, because it just didn't do it for me, guys. Just didn't do it for me. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I agree. It was definitely rushed. I think they're trying to wrap up Krakoa. I think Kieran Gillen had the right intention with it. It just couldn't be executed well in terms of, I'm hoping that his idea with this was to set this up for Gail Simone's Uncanny X-Men, because we know Kurt's over there, Rogue, Gambit, Logan, most likely Mystique and Destiny are going to show up because family. She's made it clear she's aware of all this on Twitter, responding to people's comments. So I really believe she's going to work with that. And Kieran Gillen was just trying to work with what he had, which I think was 5 or 6 issues of X-Men Forever to wrap this up, which is clearly not enough. I agree with you, including all the other shit, which I don't care about, to be honest. All the other plot shit they're trying to do, which again, don't care. But he's trying to wrap all this up, also set that up in a nice pretty bow and give it to Gale and say, here you go. So I agree it was rushed. I think it could have been done better. I definitely hope that
there could be a lot of X-Men.
Yeah, we get more with it, and I think we will. But yeah, anyways, I was just glad to see, even if it was kind of out of character, or maybe for me, it was just without good justification or build up to it. I was just happy to see that, hey, Kurt's got one parent that like does actually kind of have more the motherly bond. I do think Destiny has that more than Mystique, or at least in the more loving manner than Mystique. Not saying Mystique doesn't have motherly instincts.
I think
there's a lot of rushed. And there was enough buildup, and we need more discussions. We need to get more into it. I agree.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for, you know, carrying a child and birthing them is going to give you a different kind of relationship with that child.
Right. And that's why I believe it more with Destiny to respond in such a way, especially if like, even though it was rushed how she got her feelings, her memories back. Memories are feelings, right? It's kind of like Kurt said in that one episode, X-97, they are memories are fleeting thoughts filled with emotion or something like that. And so she got all the emotion back at once, and that was her instant reaction. To me, it makes sense. It doesn't mean they don't need to touch on that later. They absolutely need to delve into it more. And it was still rushed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, like I was saying, you know, it's, there's that dip. I have a theory about Mystique's relationship to Kurt versus Destiny's relationship to Kurt, specifically as how it has come off of X-Men Origins. Like, I do believe that Mystique loves him as a child, but I think that she loves him because he's Destiny's child.
Yes. Destiny's child.
Yeah. You know.
We love it.
Pay my bills. Whereas I think Destiny loves him as her child over, you know what I mean? Like, Destiny loves him as her child. Mystique loves him as her lover's child or Destiny's child.
Because, absolutely. You know,
and also, I think Mystique also loves him for what the promise of him was, which was, you know, like for him, like for her, he represented them having a normal life with a family and like, you know, raising a child together and like doing all these things that they never thought possible. And obviously that was never intended. We found out from Destiny. But, you know, that was what Mystique expected. So I think that there's also that part of like this idea of a life that she should have had that he represents, too. But speaking of family, and we're going to wrap this up in a minute because we're going a little long. But speaking of family, we got to go back to X-Men 97 for 1 second because we had another cameo that we did not mention. He didn't show up on screen, but we heard about him. Graydon Creed is running for something.
Yep, Grade and Creed, which means, here's the thing, because Lisa pointed this out today, as did other people, of course. It's like, where's Mystique been this season? We don't know where she is, but guess what? If Grade and Creed is going to be around next season, that means Mystique has to fucking show up. She has to reveal herself.
Well, here's the thing, from as far as I remember, like, everybody knows who Grade and Creed is. They already had, they've had their interaction in the original X-Men cartoon. That was the same episode where Rogue finds out that she's related to Nightcrawler. And I think that's the episode where Mystique dies. I'm interested to see. So it seems like, you know, we've got the three different timelines. We've got N-Sabinor and Apocalypse really being about the early timeline. The late timeline is like Mother Ascani and that whole thing. And then the middle timeline, I'm thinking we're going to get more about the Friends of Humanity and Grade and Creed, which I am all about. Let's do it. Yeah. Anything that brings the Darkholm clan to the forefront, I am all about.
Agreed. Love it. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you guys so much for joining us. Let us know what you thought about the episode too. And of course, what you thought about X-Men Forever, or anything you think about anything Nightcrawler. Just let us know. We're on all the socials, but mostly Twitter. We're on Twitter. So come find us on Twitter. But we have a website, simplyamazingpod.com, that has all of our information there. So you can find us anywhere you want to find us. And where can they find you, Lauren?
Yeah. I'm on Twitter at friendlymbhdbi. Also Instagram. I'm here or there on there. But yeah, and I was going to say something. I keep forgetting things. I swear to God. I have memory issues on both sides of my family. I'm 28 and they're hitting me already. This is a problem.
It's okay. I'm going to put you in a home soon. Don't worry.
Seriously. I'm coming to your house, Lisa. You're not putting me in a home except yours.
Oh, geez. I'll be your nurse. That'll be your nurse.
Lisa's the night nurse, everybody. Watch out.
Ooh, night nurse. I'll take it.
I'm trying to remember what I was going to say, because it was important. It had to do with you guys as the listeners. I don't know. I'll regret it later and tweet about it.
How about that?
That's what we do anyway, right? Regret something later and tweet about it.
Exactly. Well, I typically tweet and then regret. So, you know, that's typically how it works for me. But we love our listeners. If you're listening, why don't you, you know, rate us, review us, tell us if you love us, tell us you hate us, tell us all the things you do to us, because, you know, I'm lonely. But however, if you're out there now and you're listening and you, you know, went to bed last night with cool kinetic powers and you woke up this morning with fart powers, oh, I'm so sorry, honey, but you're still simply amazing.